Who you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Chad Wallace,
dog.
Man, you crazy.
Dolphins? Fucking is, dog.
Cowboys?
I'm talking about the Bucks, bro. Welcome to Tampa, home of the Raymond James.
This is the Pewter Plank Podcast, presented by PewterPlank.com. I'm Ken Bulkey. I'm joined, as always, with Leo Howell. And we got some big-time news today. Big-time news, right?
The biggest news you'll hear all offseason.
Huge news.
Colossal.
And that is that the Buccaneers are getting a new logo and a new helmet, and maybe more than that, and that everything that's sitting in your closet right now is soon to become throwback apparel, right?
I wouldn't go that far. I know that that's what you think, but... Yeah, Warren Sapp and Gerald McCoy are going to unveil a new helmet and apparently a tweaked logo on Thursday night. So whenever you're listening to this, you either already know or you don't know yet, and you can tune in to see that at 8 p.m. on NFL Network. But yeah, it's I don't think it's going to be a huge change. I think that the main driving force behind this is that they can't wear throwbacks, and they really can't wear any other kind of helmet or uniform, because their helmet base color doesn't go with anything else. So what I'm suspecting is that they're just going to make a white base helmet and, maybe change a little tweak about the helmet or about the logo in terms of like maybe making the skull and crossbones bigger or changing the tattering on the flag or the direction that the flag blows or whatever. I mean, there's plenty of different things they can do, but I don't think that there's going to be a huge change. They may have to change like pant and shirt combinations to go with the new helmet, but I don't know. The only other thing we actually know is that there's going to be a chrome grill on it, because that's what Warren Sapp said on Twitter.
Which I think that would look quite awkward on a white helmet. I could be wrong, because honestly, I don't know what that would look like, because I don't think we've ever seen that, but I think that would be kind of weird. I'm hoping it's not a white helmet myself. I just think that they don't look so hot after about 7 plays of football. They all look beat up, and you look like you're the team taking the beating 5 minutes into the game rather than laying the beating. I'm hoping for something somewhat of a matte style. I love the matte helmet look, or at least a matte logo on a shiny helmet, something of that sort. That's just what I'm pulling for. But I do actually think you're going to get a quite significantly different logo. You're going to have still, I don't think they're going away from a skull and crossbones. I don't think Bucko Bruce is coming back. I don't think there's anything
of
that sort.
He's not, yes.
Yeah, the Glazers are done with that. They finally were convinced that they can have one game with that, but I don't think that that's coming back necessarily. So I do think that you're going to have a new logo that's going to be different enough that when people look at the old logo and people look at the new logo, they're going to say, yeah, they're pretty significantly different. You're saying a little bit of a difference on the change of the flag, direction, things of that sort. I think you're going to see a completely redone skull and crossbones. And the other thing I'm kind of expecting is something that more and more sports franchises are going to, and that's like a crest. If you look at the U.S. soccer logo, that's kind of what I'm thinking is some sort of a crest that they can put on nicer looking shirts. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I can see that. In terms of chrome grill on white helmet, as you probably would expect, Oregon has done that before. And it looks pretty nice. They called it their stormtrooper look, and it looked pretty good. It would be interesting to see how whatever logo they put on there sets with the white, because it's going to be a very stark difference, white to whatever logo they make, because of the base colors of the team, the pewter and the red and usually the black accents. That's going to be so much different than, you know, the white helmet that could look weird. I think that if I had my choice, I would go with a red base helmet. You couldn't really do throwbacks at that point, but I think that like red, like a matte red, or even a shiny red, like you said, with a matte logo, or black, either matte or shiny. Because if you go with black, then you can go with a full black with those black uniforms that they sold but never wore as an alternate look, and just completely forsake the throwback stuff. But I don't think there should be a huge difference.
I have one of those nice black jerseys in my closet. Never got to wear it. Well, I got to wear it, but never got to see it on the actual team. Disappointing.
They've never used it. And I mean, I think that they could also, you know, make a helmet that just goes with more different options so that they can let Nike give them more than just an orange and a black and a red, you know?
And my last comment on that is, what are your chances that the pewterplank.com is outdated as of tomorrow night?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see what's up with that, because if they take the pewter out of the helmet, it's unlikely that they'd wear pewter pants with a non-pewter helmet. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there is a big change and pewter becomes like the base shirt color or something. You never really know, but I really hope not. That'd be a pain in the butt to have to change the name of the site like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
It would not be the best. That's not the best branding opportunity for us. But if it is the case, we can always. There's always that site forwarding thing. We can make up another name and still call it the Pewter Plank. We'll figure it out. But what is important is that there will be players wearing those jerseys. And inside of those jerseys, we expect that there may very well be a quarterback who, for whatever reason, everybody tends to love. If you read ESPN or you go on Fox website or basically any website not named thepewterplank.com, and there's one other blog that is on our side, we may get into that a little bit, they love him. We, on the other hand, are not so thrilled. And Leo has done quite an extensive amount of research on why Mike Glennon's not very good, and he's going to give us a basic run through, and then we're going to try to keep it as short as possible to basically blow up Mike Glennon and explain to you that we're going to continue doing that for the next about 6 months.
Yeah. The sad thing is that there are things I can say positively about Mike Glennon as well. And I hate just ragging on the guy because I feel like I have to go too far in the negative direction because there's so much support for him that doesn't seem to actually address what he does. There's a lot of people who are in the national media or don't usually follow Mike Glennon, and they see 19 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, decent passer rating, better than Josh Freeman, and then they go watch his tape with that bias in mind of, oh, this is what Mike Glennon is. And so then they find the things that he does that match up with that. When really, from my perspective, I liked getting Mike Glennon in the first place. I thought that he would be a good backup quarterback for the system and to sit behind Josh Freeman. I didn't think he was remotely ready to be an NFL quarterback, and I feel like he showed that when he stepped in. And so I don't feel like I started off with any bias against him, but over time, as I watched him, I just grew incredibly frustrated. So let's just start with the numbers first, and then we'll go into some other things that people say with his film, and of course we've talked about that a lot this year, but we'll talk about some more. Footballperspective.com writer Chase Stewart, who's a great follow on Twitter. I believe it's FBG Chase. You should definitely follow him. He's a very statistically based football analyst. He went through and he looked at similarity scores for quarterbacks over history. And so what he did was similarity scores are basically where you just take the summary of what a player does in a season, and you use advanced metrics. One of the advanced metrics he uses is net yards per attempt, which takes the traditional yards per attempt, but it also factors in touchdowns and interceptions. So obviously the touchdowns and interceptions part favors Glennon, while the actual yards per attempt part doesn't. So he took that and used the similarity score based on that and looked at quarterbacks since 1970 who were 24 or younger. So not even just rookies. These are just guys who are 24 or younger and finished in the top 35 among quarterbacks in terms of attempts. So basically starters. So starters from the past almost, 45 years now. It's getting kind of weird to say that far away. But so there's 97 quarterbacks in his study. And so based on similarity, the most similar players to Mike Glennon were Jeff George, Bruce Gradkowski, and Tim Couch.
And how far do you think that is off of what you think he actually is?
I think he's a tall Bruce Gradkowski.
I agree. I think Jeff George would be great.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, the first good quarterbacks you get to on his similarity scores, because basically it's like a scale of 1 or 0 to whatever Infinity, Infinity being least like, least similar. Actually, on this list, the least similar to Glennon is Scott Hunter of the Packers in 1971, but right below him are Matt Ryan and Robert Griffin III from their rookie seasons. So I think that that's fair. Those guys were out of this world good in their rookie seasons, and what they did was completely different in terms of creating big plays and things like that. The first good quarterback you get to is Ken Anderson of the Bengals, who played in the 70s, and it's really tough to compare passing numbers from the 70s to now, but you know, Ken Anderson was a decent quarterback for a while in the NFL, albeit in a very different era. Other than that, Sam Bradford and Nick Foles' names come up relatively quickly. I don't think either of those are, you know, high praise, particularly Nick Foles' rookie season, which is 2012. It's not comparing him to this year's Nick Foles. Although that's maybe, if you're looking for the silver lining on what Mike Glennon could be, it's Nick Foles-ish. Because other than that, there's nothing encouraging on his comparables.
But the difference between that is Nick Foles was put into a system that allowed him to do that, where yes, the Buccaneers' new system is defensively based.
Yeah, and I mean, as good as Jeff Tedford may be, he's not Chip Kelly. There's a lot to be said about what Chip Kelly does for an offense. As much as people wanted to doubt it coming in, he's definitely a guru on that side of the ball. But there's statistical reasons to show that Mike Glennon is going to struggle. And so what I did was I just kind of took the secondary look at this, and I just looked at quarterbacks over the past, basically since Football Reference started, which, you know, depends on which statistic you're looking at, because Football Reference, you know, charts every statistic, but not all of them have existed. So I don't know how long they've been doing yards per attempt. I assume it's forever, because you can just figure it out really easily. It's at least since the 60s. Quarterbacks in their rookie season who threw more than 300 passes and had a yards per attempt of 6.5 or less. There's only 25 of them since at least the 60s. So less than one quarterback a year does that. So it's not normal for a rookie quarterback to have a poor yards per attempt. That's not something that's just like, oh, he's a rookie, that's okay. That's it is a statistical anomaly to have lower yards per attempt as a rookie. Glennon was among the higher of this group since his was 6.27. But even still, when you look at this list of all of these rookie quarterbacks, 300 more passes, YPA of 6.5 or less, there's two on here that I would take as my quarterback today, and a third that I kind of would take, but it's tough to compare because he played so long ago. Matthew Stafford in 2009 had a YPA of 6.01. He had 13 touchdowns and 20 interceptions. He wasn't very good as a rookie, and then he got hurt the next year, and then he came back and kind of developed chemistry with Calvin Johnson and became a better quarterback. But I would take Matt Stafford, but not because of his rookie year, obviously. And Drew Bledsoe's on this list. And obviously Drew Bledsoe turned out to be a pretty darn good quarterback. Even after being replaced by Tom Brady, he proved to be a pretty good quarterback with the Bills. So those are the only two guys on here. The rest of the guys on here, just real quick, some highlight names. Gradkowski comes up again. Steve DeBerg, Joey Harrington, Blaine Gabbert, Chris Winkie, David Carr, Tim Couch, Vince Young, Kerry Collins, Jeff George, and then this year's EJ Manuel. There's just not a lot of guys on there that stand out as good. And I know that any one guy can be the one to break these statistical trends. Statistics are not set in stone guarantees of, if you find statistics that say something, this is what's going to happen. But there's a lot of really bad evidence up against Mike Glennon. The fact that he's so easily compared to Bruce Gradkowski is a big concern.
And there's a big concern for me is that when guys tend to break through those statistical barriers, when there's the short quarterback that all of a sudden becomes good, or the guy who doesn't have the big arm that all of a sudden becomes good, there's usually something to that guy that you look at and you say, I can't really put my finger on it, but he just has something that makes him good. The biggest guy that jumps out to me is Drew Brees. Everything about Drew Brees leads you to believe this guy can't be good in this league. When you looked at anything that's actually tangible, it didn't make sense. He can't do it. He won't do it.
Yeah.
And then he did.
Yeah.
Mike Glennon's kind of the opposite. He has a lot of the tangibles that lead you to believe that he can be good, and that's a great thing. We like that. Another guy that had a lot of tangibles that led you to believe he could do a good thing was Josh Freeman. Mm-hmm. But I think even with Josh Freeman, there was a little bit of that it factor that you're like, there's just something about this guy that he just comes off as I didn't really know what it was. I just always felt something when I heard him talk that, like, this guy does have kind of a grasp. When I hear Mike Glennon, really any sort of interview or even quotes, they're just so – it's just so vanilla. There's just nothing there. I just don't see any of the it factor. And Bruce Gradkowski is the last one that really I can remember that that's the same guy. It's the same guy.
Yeah, these guys are perfect backup quarterbacks. They're not personalities. They don't have anything special about them as a talent, as a football player. But if your starter gets hurt and you just need a guy who can come in and throw passes accurately, relatively accurately in both of their cases, really, that's what you get and that's what you got. And that's why I was happy about getting Mike Glennon. I thought that a third round pick on a very good backup quarterback was a totally worthwhile pick. Like you said, off the field and on the field, there's nothing special about this guy. You cannot point to any one of his skills and say, this is off the charts. This is really good. Even with Drew Brees, you can. It's impossible to know what's going on in his head, but you can see that mentally he has such a grasp on the game. And same with Russell Wilson. Same with, obviously, Peyton Manning. Just these things that you just watch them and you know that they know what's going on. You cannot watch Mike Glennon and think that he knows what's going on. He looks like he's lost back there at times. And he can overcome that. And he shows flashes of some good things in terms of forcing balls into windows that shouldn't be there and making some good throws and you know using his lack of athleticism to get out of the pocket and make some plays. But it's not enough. A couple plays a season, one game a season. People always mention the Seattle game. One game a season does not cut it. One game cannot give a guy a future. Matt Flynn is proof that you cannot base anything off of one game. And especially since, unlike Flynn, teams like the Buccaneers have so much tape on Glennon, they know that that's a farce. That's a joke. That's not him. Here's a couple other statistics that I found on Glennon that are very intriguing. And I posted these on the site. You can go to the Pewter Plank and check this out. It's our quarterback position recap and preview. ESPN.com's splits for Glennon in the first quarter, or excuse me, not even the first quarter. This is broken down by attempts. So in his first 10 attempts, he had a quarterback rating of almost 110. His next 10 attempts, it drops to 84.3. His next 10 attempts, it dropped to 78. And then any game where he went over 30 attempts, it dropped to 45.6. As Mike Glennon goes through the game, he gets worse. It's just every statistic, every split proves it. As he goes through the game, he gets worse. And so one of the things you always say about a rookie quarterback is, how will they do when their tape catches up to them? How will they do once defenses catch up to them? Once defenses figure out what they're doing? Once they get out of their comfort zone? Once they're faced with something that they're not capable of dealing with? For Glennon, that happened in the game. By the time the second half came around, there was nothing he could do. He was deer in headlights out there. And part of that's his coaching, and I'm sure that Jeff Tedford will do better than that. So if Mike Glennon's the starter next year, I don't think it will be that harsh of a difference. But even still, there are statistical proof that Mike Glennon gets worse as the game goes on, and there are really concerning reasons for why that happens that aren't just coaching. Like arm fatigue or mental fatigue or just being easily figured out by defenses. Any of those things are extremely concerning as a quarterback, particularly as a rookie.
So every single time I read quotes from national media, I just bang my head against my computer. And I've actually gone through four of them now since the offseason has begun. I keep breaking the glass on my computer screen with my forehead. But then I look at quotes coming out of the organization, quotes from Lovie Smith, quotes from Jason Light, quotes from Jeff Tedford. And while they continue to say that Mike Glennon, they like things that they see about Mike Glennon, I've yet to see one single quote that calls Mike Glennon the starting quarterback or even goes long far enough to say that Mike Glennon's our guy or anything of that sort. And maybe that's my bias reading the quote, because I'm hoping to not read that, and I go out of my way to not read between the lines. But just the surface quotes, every single time, from every guy in this organization, to me, are reading as if they're not 100% sold on him yet, and that going quarterback seemingly may still be an option coming up in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that the main proof of your point was when Jeff Tedford was asked about him at his first press conference. And one of the first things he said was, it's tough to evaluate a guy without knowing what he was asked to do. And I think that that's a key thing for these guys, is that there are some things about Glennon that concern them, but they can't know for sure why they happened until they know what Sullivan and Shiano were asking him to do. But even still, it seems like, yeah, every compliment is followed with a, well, we're still evaluating, well, we'd like some competition, well, you could never have enough quarterbacks. All of those are quotes that have been said within discussions about Glennon. So there's definitely not a commitment to, hey, Mike Glennon's our guy. There's some praise for him. They like his size. They like his arm strength. They like blah, 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 his poise. All these things that you just say about a quarterback because they're words that, you know, people aren't going to go check. And people agree with it. Like you said, the national media, Bleacher Report, put out their top 65 quarterbacks as a part of their NFL 1000 series. They ranked Mike Glennon 18th among NFL quarterbacks. That's ahead of Robert Griffin III. That's ahead of Ryan Tannehill. I can't even begin to understand how he got the score. But they grade things, and they have these different categories that they give a guy a score based out of a maximum, and they just add it up, and wherever they fall, that's where they fall. They gave him a 15 out of 15 in arm strength. I don't even understand. First of all, he has one of the slowest passes in the NFL. When he was in the combine, his passes were incredibly slow compared to the other quarterbacks at the combine. And number two, it's great to have arm strength. Use it. Use it once in a while. I've seen no proof that he knows how to use his arm strength. Like, there were two or three plays where he really zipped the ball into tight coverage, and he was awful throwing the ball down the field. Awful. Horrendous. Like, 20 yards down the middle of the field, he's fine. But if he has to extend the ball out to either sideline, it's awful. And that's arm strength. Confidence in your arm strength should also be a part of arm strength. Because they also included mechanics as a section. And his mechanics may be sound. And I'm not a quarterback guru enough to know much about his mechanics, except I can watch his feet. And sometimes he fades away from the line of scrimmage. And that's a concern. Arm strength needs to be usable. People talk about his lack of mobility, but then he has functional mobility. He also needs to have functional arm strength. He needs to use it. He's scared. He doesn't see the play developing. He doesn't use his arm strength to beat a defender. He did that like once all season. I remember there was one touchdown where he split two linebackers and fired the ball into the back of the end zone. And that's what you need to do all the time. If you've got a strong arm, you need to do what Aaron Rodgers does. Aaron Rodgers buzzes the ball past defenders' ears because he knows it's just going to get there too quick and they can't do anything about it. Mike Glennon will never do that based on what I've seen. Could Jeff Tedford teach him that? Whatever. Yes, sure. Caveat everything I say with there's a possibility that Jeff Tedford is the Midas of quarterback coaches and he's just going to come in and fix everything. But from what I saw, Glennon is not. He's too scared. He doesn't do it. He waits for guys to get open. He doesn't. Joe Bussell in his scouting report, and you can go read that on our site as well, or go to his site, NFLphilosophy.com. On his scouting report of the Bucs, he said he doesn't understand how the routes that are called are going to impact the defense. And I think that that's a key thing in how you look at him and what he did as a quarterback. He didn't step up to the line with confidence of, okay, as soon as this guy breaks, I'm going to throw the ball here and he's going to get it. It was, okay, once this guy breaks, okay, now I see he's open, now I'm going to throw him the ball. And that can work. That can be effective. But that's such a backup quarterback thing to do. That's the safe way to do it. That's the easy way to do it. And that's not how you make big plays. That's not how you win. That's how you don't lose. That's the Trent Dilfer to the Super Bowl method, is just find the open guy, throw him the football, don't get an interception. And I don't think that the Bucs are going to succeed by doing that. You have to have a lights-out defense to even come close to succeeding with a quarterback like that.
And they very well may have a lights-out defense, which is good to think about. But you're right. That it's not just about having the lights-out defense and then having a backup quarterback and settling for that. I mean, right now, I think you and I agree the Bucks have a backup quarterback starting.
Yes.
But there is still some time, and the most obvious place to address that would be in the NFL draft. However, again, if you read anything about the NFL draft and about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, unless you're on thepewterplank.com, you're very rarely going to find anything that says the Bucs are going to go quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, never. You never
so,
see
so
it.
Why? Where is that coming from? Why that is that coming from the organization, or is that just coming from the national media reading all their colleagues' pieces and saying, Mike Glennon must be good enough?
Yeah, there's this incredible notion among guys that the line I keep seeing is that, and this was even before, obviously, when Shiano was still here, and I think people have still carried it over, is that Glennon did enough to deserve another chance. And I just don't think that that's true. Touchdown to interception ratio is not, it's like wins and losses for quarterback, or for pitchers in baseball. It's the wins and losses of quarterbacks. You can't base things off of just that. You need to look at the whole thing. And that's what Jason Light and his team are doing. But there was a report, and I don't remember, I think it was from Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, who is the same one who did the scouting report on Glennon, is that he's heard from a source that the Bucks actually aren't settled on Glennon, and that they're going to go through OTAs and they're going to be watching him, and that they won't make up their decision until then. I just think that got glossed over, because I think that's just contrary to what everyone's been saying about him, and it's the Bucks, so they don't care, and it's Mike Glennon, so they don't care, because it's just not a big story. No one's going to click on that article except for Bucks fans, and the Bucks aren't a big enough fan base. So the national media just doesn't care enough, and I'm not like trying to say that we're victims or whatever, it's just the nature of having a small market team. The Bucks just don't command that kind of attention for people to care that much about their quarterback. And so they see 19-9 as a touchdown interception ratio, and they just pencil in a wide receiver because he needs more people to throw the ball to. And I disagree, you disagree, and the fans that listen to this, you know, they have an opinion, and they at least get our side of the story. But I think it's disappointing, but it's just kind of the way it is when you don't have Mark Sanchez at quarterback, or you don't have Andy Dalton at quarterback, and you're not a bigger name team that's in the news and the playoffs and all this stuff, and, you know, kind of have more attention. I just don't think people really actually know much at all about Mike Glennon.
And one thing that I've never seen written yet by really anybody on national media is the fact that Mike Glennon did not play in one significant game. You might be able to argue there was one when they were 0-3 and he came in and lost to the Cardinals and lost that game. That's the reason they lost the game, was because of Mike Glennon. He threw two interceptions that couldn't happen. Two of the nine were in his first game.
Yeah.
That from there, when you're 0-4, you're done. You're 0-4, you have a rookie quarterback that's not showing much, you're done, period. That's it. Your season's over. There's no pressure from outside sources. There's even little pressure. I never really saw all that much pressure from Tampa Bay media. We didn't even put that much pressure on Mike Glennon right away. Nobody did.
Yeah.
It was just, well,
yeah,
no
us
big
and,
deal.
Us here at the Pewter Plank and the folks at Bucks Nation, we were the only ones breaking him down and trying to actually evaluate what he's doing, because it seems like everyone was just so happy that he was not Josh Freeman, that literally anyone not named Josh Freeman could line up a quarterback for the Bucks, and everyone would have been perfectly happy. And that's just not good enough. This franchise has been littered with awful quarterbacks since it started. You can't just settle for not Josh Freeman. You need to get better. This is an NFL that has turned into a passing league on offense. And while running the ball is still going to be possible, and it's still going to be something that you can do, the Eagles did it very well this year, you still need someone who's capable at quarterback, and we're both in agreement that at his very best, Glennon could maybe be like a fringe 20th to 25th best starting quarterback.
He's never a Pro Bowler,
but
which is what you want.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, your quarterback has to go to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you want him to sniff the Pro Bowl. You want to be mad that he didn't make the Pro Bowl. You just want somebody who you can say against the average team, our quarterback's better than theirs. And obviously not every team can have that, but not every team gets the seventh pick in a draft that has, you know, I think two, but some people think three or four potential franchise guys at quarterback. Who could be that? There's no Peyton Mannings, but we're not asking for a Peyton Manning. I'd like a Matt Ryan. And that's what people tried to say Mike Lennon is, and he's definitely not. You know, I'd like a Tony Romo. I'd like a this current version of Philip Rivers. Just a guy like that. Doesn't have to be lighting up the world. Doesn't have to be fantastic. We don't need a Russell Wilson. We don't need a Peyton Manning. We don't need an Aaron Rodgers. Those would be great. I would love to have any of those. Obviously, who wouldn't? There's no NFL franchise that wouldn't want to have a guy like that. But I think that a Blake Bortles can be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. I think that Teddy Bridgewater could be a top 5, but more likely to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And I think that I don't think Johnny Manziel is, unless he gets really well coached and fixes some things. I think Derek Carr could be marginally better than Glennon. And if he's like a second round guy, I'd be okay with that. But I think that those top two guys, if either of them are there at 7, I think that that's your shot. That's your lucky break, is that guys at the top of the draft made some different decisions than you expected, and he falls into your lap. And I think that that's something that the Bucs should pursue, because you have a quarterback or an offensive coordinator who's a quarterback's coach. And I think you're the ideal situation to bring in a young quarterback and develop them. And then you have a good backup quarterback. Mike Lennon is not going to go anywhere, and he's a good backup quarterback. And I think that he would be able to assume that role really well. And, you know, if you're concerned about Teddy Bridgewater getting hurt because he doesn't weigh enough, then you've got the right backup quarterback to step in for him. So I think that this would be an ideal situation. I'm afraid that the quarterbacks aren't going to be there. I don't want anything to do with Johnny Manziel. I don't want Derek Carr that high. And there's a good shot that Bortles and Bridgewater are both gone, based on everything that everyone's saying. But again, last year, everyone thought that Ryan Nassib, Geno Smith, and EJ Manuel were all going to go in the top 10 too. So you really don't know until it happens. But I think that passing on this opportunity to address that need just puts the Bucs back into the situation where they were before, where they're never going to get another shot to get a quarterback like that. And they're just going to kind of be stuck in the middle of the road, or worse, at the quarterback position for years to come.
My final word on Mike Glennon is I just want everybody listening to this to first understand that you have broken down more film on Mike Glennon than any person in national media. I guarantee that. I have broken down quite a bit, probably more than most, but not more than everyone. I guarantee you have broken down more film than him. I trust your opinion as much as anyone that I've read or that I will read about Mike Glennon, because you actually have done that. I want to make sure that everybody listening to this understands that we don't just come in with this super bias based on nothing. You actually have broken down the film. I've read the things you've broken down, and in that case, I've read and seen some of the things of why we don't believe Mike Glennon is the future. That being said, on top of that, I also want to bring in the fact that keep understanding that there is more to quarterback than simply what you do on the field. There is something to being a personality. There is something to being marketable. There is something to being that guy on the team that this guy simply does not have. And I just don't ever see him developing into that player. If you want to be a franchise quarterback and a franchise player in the NFL, you have to start becoming something more than just a solid to good player on the field. Look at Gerald McCoy. 2 years ago, we knew there was something about Gerald McCoy mentally and personality-wise that you're like, this guy has a real shot to become something. Now he's the face of the franchise, and he's unveiling the new logo on NFL Network with the last face of the franchise. It's happening with him. And look at what's happening on the field. You're seeing it. The connection is there. With Mike Glennon, it simply is not. There is no big personality that can lead this team to somewhere they really, really need to get to, which is, in a current NFL state, they need to have a more than formidable quarterback. We're going to have a better defense. We're going to have a pretty good team, in my opinion, next year. They need to take this opportunity. They pick 7th. There are certainly spots above them that if there's a chance to move into the top 3 or 4 or whatever it takes to get Bortles or Bridgewater, you have to do it. This is the chance, because the fact is the guy at quarterback now doesn't have something that he needs to become an elite quarterback.
Yeah, like I said, I think that his on the field and his off the field really match. I think that they're just nothing special, and Everyone says he's a hard worker, all that stuff. I think that everything about him, and I don't put too much stock in the off-the-field stuff, but I can definitely see the merits behind it. But just regardless, everything he does just screams out the perfect grinder backup quarterback. And I think that's what we both see in him. And I'm not going to be offended if Mike Glennon's the Bucs backup quarterback forever, like Charlie Whitehurst has been in San Diego.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I think that that's ideal. His contract is cheap. He has starting experience now. I don't think if Mike Glennon enters next year as the Bucs backup quarterback, the Bucs have the best backup quarterback in the league, and I don't think it's even close.
Which would be good.
Yeah.
That would be nice to have that. I agree.
Yeah, because you never know. You never know what's going to happen at the quarterback position. So it's always good to have a good backup.
Step in and be formidable.
Particularly one that just kind of stays quiet and isn't going to be this distraction. You don't want Josh Freeman sitting on the sideline when you're trying to start Matt Cassel and Christian Ponder in Minnesota. You just want Mike Glennon to be just sit there and just do what he does. And I think that that's something that the Bucs will benefit from next season if he's not the starter. If he is the starter, then they've got a lot of things to work on.
So give me your last words on Mike Glennon on the eve of the new logo being announced.
I just really, like you said, I've watched a lot of Mike Glennon, and I've watched his All-22 film from every week, and I don't think that it's unfair, like people have said, to judge him as just a rookie or a guy who didn't have any weapons, because there are things that you can do and things that you don't do as a quarterback that it doesn't matter who you have on the field with you or how old you are. There are just things that just give a window into what you are as a quarterback. There's not a ton of guys out there who have drastically improved over their career. There are guys who have started off with bad numbers, but had the skills. Numbers and skills kind of go hand in hand when evaluating a quarterback. And I think with both, we see serious things that are wrong with Glennon. Will he have better talent this year? Yes. Will he have better coaching this year? Yes. But I just don't think that that's enough to say that he's guaranteed to be better. It's not Madden. The numbers don't just automatically go up over the offseason. There are serious things that are concerns with him. And if you have any questions about them, if you are wondering what I'm referring to, our article recapping Mike Glennon for the season, I linked to three of our film reviews. They include photos of plays that he ran, break down every play that he had in some games, all like 25, 26, 27 attempts. Just go through every one of them and break them all down. Go read them, leave comments, tweet us. I'm always happy to defend my position on Mike Glennon. I've posted a bunch of different articles about him. You can definitely search through the site for them. But just do some research on him. Go beyond the 19-9. Go beyond the QB rating. Because it's easy to say, oh, well, he had a better QB rating than Andrew Luck as a rookie or Peyton Manning as a rookie or all these different things. It's tougher. It's more of an investment to actually look at how he got there. And I think that that's the big concern. It's not the result, it's how he got there. Because you want repeatable success. And I'm afraid that's not something that Glennon has set himself up for.
Well, that's all we have for you today. This has been the Pewter Plank Podcast, presented by PewterPlank.com. I'm Ken Bolke. You've been joined with Leo Howell. We will see you next week.